Hi, I'm the Dark Tangent, and you're about to listen to some speeches from DEF CON 2, held at the Sahara Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, 1994, July 22nd to the 24th. This speech and all speeches are copywritten, the Dark Tangent and DEF CON Communications, all rights reserved, except permission is granted for educational nonprofit use. Now, the Sahara, like most other hotels DEF CON's been at, has since been blown up to make way for a bigger and better hotel. So with that in mind, sit back, relax, get ready for some good speeches.
Okay, next up we have Jackal, who's going to do a quick overview of radio technology. Do you have handouts? Okay. Okay. Hello, can you hear me okay?
I'm basically going to do more of an overview. Probably not going to get as detailed as the previous speakers are probably going to dwarf me, but anyway, I figure I'd just give a general overview so people can get an idea of the whole grasp of radio in general, covering different aspects. Radio goes back for quite a ways. It's been around for, over 100 years. And it's been used a lot. Most people seem to have misconceptions about radio. Most people seem to have a superstitious idea about it because it's the magical box we have.
Not better?
Okay. But historically, it was just something that's a big mystery that some strange arcane hobbyists messed around with. They got they took some wire, which people didn't see telegraphs. They understood you stick a wire, and somehow something went along the wire and got from point A to point B. But then people had these boxes not connected to anything but a power source, and then they're hearing stuff happening over the distance. And at first there was some noise that something was happening until a man by the name of Marconi did the transatlantic signal, and you realize, wow, this stuff can really go long distance. You can really do some amazing stuff with this. And that's when all sorts of various hobbies started jumping in there. Initially, the only use that's made out of it, since they could just barely get the thing to work, is telegraphy, just sending Morse code back and forth, because all it managed to send is just the wave itself, and the radios themselves were dirty, filtering with not even an issue because there wasn't any special information. It was just turning the transmitter on and off, and that's all you had with there. Later on, it followed a similar development as Wines did with getting voice on there. Most machines were bulky. It was all AM, which is fairly simple. And people went up higher in frequencies, and they realized, hey, the higher frequency you go, by laws of physics, the actual wavelength is shorter, so you don't have to construct these massive, huge antennas. Initially all I could do is just send something from one building to another building, and that's all I could do, until finally got smaller ones, and it's like, hey, we can be mobile with this. And then more developments happened. There's FM, which was invented early on, but again, everything was bulky. And one place where we couldn't tell how much bulk was in airplanes, but by the time FM was shrunk down, it's been using aircraft for so long that to this day, all aircraft is still AM. There are too many holdouts like that. Most equipment gets tossed out as time goes on, things wear out, people want better technology, and they keep upgrading. But everyone's been watching things get smaller and smaller, things get crisper and cleaner, and people were saying, gosh, we're going to get to where it is in Star Trek. We're going to have our little personal communicator, the little button we tap on our shoulder, and, we can talk to anyone worldwide. There's enough technology that it's theoretically possible, but there's a lot of sacrifices to be made for that, mostly in organizing it and using up the space that we deal with. It's great to have the idea that the airway, the air is free and unlimited, and we could use it as far as the eye can see, but unfortunately, there's only so much usable space. There's sections that are great for long-distance communications. There are other sections that are great for urban areas. But then past a certain point, it just starts becoming light, and it's not really that usable. So then you have to start worrying about, okay, how are we going to carve up the space? And right now the FCC is reorganizing the territory. But I want to go over just basic overview of some of the basic technologies. You know, I've heard several terms like what is a carrier? What is modulation? What is AM? What is FM? Basically, a carrier is energy, electromagnetic energy, that goes at a certain frequency. In other words, it moves back and forth at a certain rate, and the frequency determines its properties. And then we're sitting into that number, can listen in on it. Not necessarily listen in, but at least can receive it. AM, that you've all seen on your radios, or amplitude modulation, is basically making the voltage stronger and weaker. And there's not a whole lot to it, but it isn't perfect either. FM is a lot cleaner, which is basically instead of making voltage better, it's moving actual carrier back and forth. It uses a little more space, but it's cleaner and helps not get interference. And the ones that, as I mentioned before, SPED spectrum is new technology that doesn't use the conventional ones. Usually we'll have the idea to have a carrier, and somehow we'll modulate, we'll put some information on that carrier and send it through the air and then pull it off. And SPED spectrum uses a different concept. It's basically spreading the energy out over a wide area, and there are, I think, six techniques used that are known, two of which can be experimented with in amateur radio, the rest are just solely for government use. And the one that's mentioned before is frequency hopping. Basically, that's where a transmitter and receiver, once they get tuned to each other, will send a carrier at different portions of the spectrum back and forth at, one radio checking up on, about 100 times a second. So it's jumping one section, getting the info, and time moves to another section, getting info moving again. Some of the newer military radios and espionage radios are using that. And the correction channel, the global positioning system, uses that. Where basically they're not just using one band, they're moving it all over the place. So they can deviate, people can use it a little bit, but again, the government, since it's their satellites, their toys, they'll have the best stuff. Basic information can be sent, what can be sent on there. Basically, just about any sort of electrical signal. People got pretty creative. There's voice, there's TV. Most common thing people do when listening is there's voice. Since radio's been around for a while, there have been what I like to think of as various cultures within there. They're basically areas that have been around for a while. The most common one is monitoring, people who listen to stuff just as a hobby. Most common one is the scanners. And monitoring itself, listening, has been around as long as radio has been around. From hearing the first experiments to hearing what stuff goes on. And there wasn't really much laws about it around the turn of the century until Communications Act of 1934, because the Federal Radio Commission that was around then basically had some light legislation, had the enforcement arm, couldn't really deal with any problems that arose. Communications Act of 34 did basically two things. It created the FCC and gave it the tools and the funding and basic technology to enforce radio law. And the basic laws that were set forth were basically built around general principles, where they understood, radio's changed a lot in the last several years, it's probably going to change more, we have no idea what it's going to look like in the future, so, we'll just build around these principles, which is basically, for the average citizen, you can listen to transmissions, and this is in general, if, one, you keep it to yourself, you're not divulging personal information, you don't use it to commit a crime, and you're not using it for personal gain, like financial information. And then there are a few other exceptions, but that's basically it. And that's the basic rule of thumb that's been around to this day. There's been a number of states where politicians got all heated up about, you know, gosh, people have been listening to stuff, we can't have that. And so they passed these anti-scanner laws, and they've gone through various legal flip-flops. And it's, they have, best they could do, as far as politicians could have seen, is they actually saw the box. They didn't understand the technology, and they didn't know the traditions, they didn't know the previous law. So they make the various laws to deal with the box. And all the word they kept hearing, the famous buzzword, is the scanner. And it's like, ooh, there's scanners. And people keep thinking, oh, scanners. Scanners are illegal. All a scanner is, for anyone who's wondering, is just a radio that can have more than one frequency programmed in and check it without it to see if there's anything there. That's all it is. It's just a radio receiver. And all a radio essentially does is just take the waves that are going through the air, through the buildings, through our bodies, which can cause disease high enough power levels. It just takes what's in the air and just takes what quirks are on there and puts it back into sound or sight or whatever form of modulation was on there. The monitoring community has been around for a while, and they're not always that active. There are a lot of people who listen. Anyone can go down to Radio Shack or whatever and buy a scanner and listen to local police frequencies. Some people wondering, is this an ethical thing to do? Personally, I think so for a couple of reasons. One is we do hold law enforcement to certain standards. Again, it's just ways of going through the air, but about police in particular, since people get touchy about that, is you see very clearly not only stuff as it happens, which is one of the main attractions for listening, but you have to see how law enforcement agencies operate. And I found that they're not all the same. There's certain ones that are very honorable in intentions, very disciplined, and do a very good job, and have a lot of respect for them. But then you also find out certain agencies are not so much interested in, say, safety, but they're more interested in control. And the interesting thing is you hear how they operate. If you listen for a while, you can see, you know, how they think, what they do. And there's been some interesting quotes that I've heard over the air. I mean, everything from, like, certain raids that I heard going on where they chase someone down and maybe they fudge a couple of rolls, that's no big deal, all the way to something that they know they're not supposed to be up to. One time I was listening to dispatch, and one officer contacted another officer for local police, and he said, you know, go to tactical. So they went to tactical frequency. And then once they're on tactical, they said, okay, you're in such and such range, okay, go to car. And once they went to car frequency, which is like a lot shorter range, it said, okay, you're within this range, okay, meet you in the alley behind the fast food place, and then don't say anything more. So you know, you won't hear everything, but you can see generally how they operate. You can see, not to put it into, you can't say who the good guys are and the bad guys are. It's just human nature. Anyway, that's basically it for monitoring. There's, you know, vast majority of it is just listening to voice transmission. There's other forms that they use to take special equipment to watch TV images or no data transmissions. Another community that's been around for a long time is ham radio. People say, what is ham radio? Or it's like, well, my old cousin has a ham radio, or yeah, someone has this big antenna. Ham radio, amateur radio, is a license granted by the FCC, and they started the regulations back in 1934. It's basically for those who want to experiment and get need to take a test for different levels of license classes. But it's basically showing that you know what you're doing, you respect the laws, you want to learn the technology and find out about it, and basically they're saying, okay, you can do this. And there are 24 bands scattered across the spectrum, and amateur radio encompasses every form of radio use that is in use. Everything from just talking on voice to Morse code, which some people still use that because it's kind of interesting, to video transmissions going back and forth, to data transmissions, and the FCC has even authorized two modes of inspection to experiment with, including frequency hopping. They can kind of see how that works. Doesn't mean it's easy, but at least they make the means available. The community itself, because they actually have to study, because they actually have to look at it, you know, because they have to respect the laws, and because they're checked on by the FCC on a regular basis, tends to be very clean, very fraternal, and because it's technical, populated more often by engineers. One little offshoot of ham radio has been CB radios. You know, I'm sure everyone has seen CB. It's a lot more anarchistic. It basically said one of the ham bands, because people were saying back in the 40s, we want radio. You know, we don't have to take special license. You know, the air belongs to people, and we need to be able to talk. The first attempt was port 40 radio. It didn't work very well. It only worked like 100 yards. Wasn't much. So they took the 11-meter ham band using ham and just said, okay, here you go. And they had minimal licensing, basically your name and address, and you know that was it. And so it had a million people and 100,000 more coming through, and they said, okay, we give up, you know, have that. And since then, for those who are interested to see what would it be like without any regulations, CB is the closest thing to pure anarchy on the air that you can get to. There are laws, but they're seldom enforced. There's, you know, millions and millions of people, and of course there are people who crank up amplifiers and modify the radios and make mistakes because a lot of them generally don't know what they're doing. It's a lot more dynamic because anyone can grab a radio and start talking. So it's not as contained, it's not as restrained. You don't have to worry as much about you know, the feds coming to your door and saying, hey, you said something bad, you know, the other day on the air. It, you know, it just generally doesn't happen. It's very anarchistic, but it is kind of interesting for those who want to see what free air is like. And I like to see the air, you know, philosophically I'd like to see the air free, but the reality is in radio, it's one jerk can screw up a lot of stuff. So there is need to keep things in line. There is need for some laws. We don't need a whole lot of them, but the need is there. And then basically the other communities are there. Sort of an offshoot of ham radio and TV's in public service, and main organizations in there are, for ham radio, there's RACES and ARIES, and they basically assist during times of disasters like fires and earthquakes. And RACES is the one that's backed by the Department of Defense. They realize, hey, when all of the lines of communications go down, we got these guys who've got their radios and know how to use them, and they're used in times of need, but generally only when there's a large emergency. And then there's another organization called REACT, Radio Assist, Emergency Associated Communications Team, and it's more community-based. I'm a member, and I got into it because there are ways that I saw there's a genuine need. One of the turning points is when I witnessed a kidnapping, and unbeknownst to the kidnapper, I saw him and followed him, and I had basic information after I helped this one other lady I was involved in it for a long enough time, close enough to police, that if I had the radio with me, if there had been people there, you know, I could have contacted through the air, would have been able to catch him at the time. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case. We just got, you know, some limited information out. Since then, they do all sorts of other things. The most common activities, catching drunk drivers, reporting various crimes. I helped out during the communications for parade, you know, the search and rescue. There's all sorts of variety of things. It's pretty interesting. It's all volunteer, so not everyone is up to it. A lot of people are just too busy. And then one of the other ones is the pirate radio and clandestine pirate radio. Basically, those unlicensed, technically any unlicensed broadcasts, and usually the people who would like to do broadcasting to, you know, be able to talk to people, maybe play some music, give their points of view, get a message across. Unfortunately, unlike all the other licenses that the FCC issues, which are nickel and dime in comparison, there's a huge amount of money required to do any sort of commercial broadcasting. There's a lot of laws and bonds required. It's a big pain, and only the very rich can actually get involved in it. And generally what the FCC has said to people who want to get involved in broadcasting is they say, well, go to work for a radio station, which then you quickly find out when you've got to go for a job that money's dictating what's going on and not necessarily public good. I mean, they do keep things clean on there, but again, it's dictated by money. And pirate radio is means for people to be able to speak locally. And I've met various radio pirates, and the vast majority of them want to be able to talk to their communities. They would pay fees to the FCC if there was some low-power equivalent for broadcasting. They don't need large range. They don't need mega power. They just want to go talk to the community. But so far, the FCC hasn't provided it. And so you can see over the various transmitters, people that are providing means so those who want it can build them and go to work themselves. If my suggestion is that if you do need something like that, be real, real wary. I mean, for those of you who saw the movie Pump Up the Volume, the FCC isn't anything like it's on there. They're not these buffoons that just wander around and say they're, you know, looking out for the public good. They're very secretive. They're a very strange animal. And even if you know they're up to certain investigations, there's no telling what they're going to end up doing. They might go after someone like there's no tomorrow, or they might just like scare them half to death and say, don't do this again, and then walk off. The technical expertise is very, very good, and being able to find transmitters is, you know, once you know what to do, once you have the equipment, it's very easy. In local amateur radio clubs, I've gone on transmitter hunts in, you know, 2- and 3-person teams on for like tiny 1-watt transmitters that are buried underground across the county, competing with the same frequency with several others, and we've been able to find them once you know what to look for. And it's a snap. It's real easy. And the FCC not only has unmarked vans going around, they also have permanent monitoring stations on mountaintops everywhere. They check everything that goes on. They might not necessarily do much with it, but they listen to everything. So for those who think, well, you know, the FCC is never going to catch me, or I'm just too slick for them, or, you know, they won't know how to find me, it's like, no. It's as soon as you start sending something, especially if it's clear, they see you, they know probably within a couple of feet where you are, they know what kind of radio it is, how it works, or maybe you're likely to have got it, and, you know, all sorts of things. So it's basically a matter of, like, how motivated they are. They tend to have a lot of inertia, where there'll be complaints to neighbors for something, or someone will be getting away with something for a while, and once their attention's roused, then they'll start checking into something, and they'll just compile lots and lots and lots of information and not really say anything to anyone, even among those that help them, until finally they'll, you know, go up and deal with the person. They might try to hunt them down, you know, chase them on the freeway like you've seen in the movies, but sometimes, like the last one that I know of in my area, they're just sitting on the guy's front lawn and saying, hi, we know what we've been up to. We have everything. We know everything. Like to talk to us? And that's basically it. A strange offshoot of that is clandestine radio, and that's basically unlicensed broadcasts that have nothing to do with getting information to the public. It's the type that's used by people who don't want to be identified by anyone else, which is mainly espionage for the high-tech stuff, and usually guerrilla operations. Several friends might have picked up on transmissions coming from Central America, where it's basically a lady will get on the air and just start reading up numbers, and then no call sign, no information, nothing else. It's usually either troop movements for guerrillas, or more commonly, this local here is drug dealers, because that's how they manage to schedule the shipments. Even though they might tap every phone, they'll be doing a lot of stuff by radio, and because it's going through the air, you can't really stop it. You can find out where it comes from, but, you know, it's the old cat and mouse game. That's basically it for the various communities. The most vocal forces are the monitoring community somewhat, only when everyone gets riled, and then ham radio because they have federal backing in some ways. The emergency branch is backed by the Department of Defense, and there's recently been bills passed through Congress that give it additional support because a lot of people who just happen to have a large antenna on the block will get harassed if there's like any sort of problem there, and they just point to whatever's big and say, oh, it's got to be that person. It's got something big, you know. So that's basically the people there. And, you know, which brings us to what are we doing about this today? What is there? On the ethical side, I mentioned the Communications Act of 34. Those basic guidelines would have been followed for a long, long time. And it's very similar to the hacker ethic, if you will, about information being free. Because basically, as far as monitoring goes, if you keep it to yourself, you don't do anything with it illegal or rip anyone off or anything, you just quietly, chuckle about it and that's it, is legal with like a few odd exceptions. And that's pretty much run to this day. Many people may believe otherwise, but it's still there. Most notable exception that everyone knows about is cellular, which, when the ECPA came out, sure there were some good intentions, but there's a lot of lobbying that went on during that. So it's basically Congress giving in to industry pressures. It was basically the first time at the federal level where they there's a law passed that said you may not listen to this these types of transmissions or this type of technology, which is kind of silly considering that the law covers it anyway. People would still listen, but under the Act of 34, if you listen, you don't do anything about it, you don't get hurt, nothing happens. And if you did do something with it, like took financial information or tried to get away from cops, then you committed a crime under the old law. It covered what you did with it, not necessarily hearing something, because, again, the waves go through the air. Then the guy mentioned something about cordless, which I personally think is rather absurd. Cordless, the band that it's on, is shared with several other things. The technology is real cheap, relatively primitive, and all the frequencies are shared with baby monitors, they're shared with various intercoms, and if you turn to cordless channel 7, it's an exact match with most of the kids' walkie-talkies. If anyone doesn't believe that, go to Radio Shack, pick one up, go to a phone, cordless phone where you can go on channel 7, turn on, and you will hear it. It's a perfect match. Again, people hear each other like the baby monitors, and then there's also low power experimental broadcast, which is one of the things allowed, in the same band. It's crowded, and there's a lot of stuff there. And then someone saying, well, you might be able to listen to something, is, missing the point. There's, they mentioned that there's an expectation of privacy when they do it. They never bothered to look at the bottom of the phone that says conversations are not secure using this phone. It's on the bottom of every single cordless phone made since I can remember. The reason being is you're not sending something through a protected line. You're sending it through the air. You're announcing it. And you're using something that's very simple, very simple technology, electrically very similar to, the sound waves itself. Similar to just going out on your front porch, talking to a neighbor, and expecting everyone to just plug their ears in case you happen to be talking to someone and they might not want you to know what they're talking about. Radio is something that's very open. It's very pervasive, very widespread. It's basically very akin to the air itself in several respects. And anything you send through the air is accessible. You don't need to go to a wire. You don't need to break into anything. It's just signals going through the air, often through our bodies. And that's, brings up kind of a problem is just thinking it's not so much you going to information and then leashing it out of someone who's trying to protect it. It's they're sending it out to the world, especially on high-powered transmitters, various applications, and they're saying, here, it's an electrical shout. And as far as security and privacy, it all boils down to what measures you take. If you go the cheapest route for possible, you're going to get very cheap security. And there's a lot of things that can be done. I remember a couple of years ago when I was listening to local cordless, people did take the measures. There's speech inverters, which, sure, it's not top-notch, and any government agency can crack a thing because, your basic scrambles are a piece of cake to make, but most people don't even know about them, and it's a real pain to deal with if you're just expecting to hear something crystal clear. It's effective enough. You can hear bits of pieces of conversation, but, it works. And then there's better modes from there. There are some really advanced scrambling methods that, don't need to get into here, but suffice to say that you have the bucks, you can get pretty superior communications than a little bit few people. You need to say something? Oh. But, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. To monitor a trunk system? Yeah, I check my local fire department. It can be a pain because it's a very advanced system. Well, trunking, for those of you who don't know, is where you have a whole block of frequencies. You have given channels, and you have like 20 channels set up. And basically, instead of having to compete for a particular frequency or fight over it or collide, there's one or two channels given to control it, and digital signals sent every time someone wants to speak, and it picks whatever ones are available, goes to whatever's open. And it's very efficient, very effective, but for those who want to monitor it, you have to monitor 20 frequencies at once. So basically what you have to do is devote a whole bank of frequencies and scanner to listen to this. It's not hard, other than the fact that just things jump around. If you want to hear something continuously, basically have to wait for periods of low activity, or be very diligent if there's some large emergency going on and you want to cover everything. I'm sure you could build some device to actually monitor the control channel, but control channels change themselves and they don't use conventional protocols. That's basically it with that. I haven't seen anything. It's not. It wouldn't really be practical because you'd set up a system, and you could. I'm sure you could build a device to do it. It's very low speed data transmissions. With not that hard if you've ever done, anything building digital devices from scratch. The problem is that you can listen to that. Like in my example, the fire department. You can follow what goes on. You could probably display it on the screen. But then that's just for the fire department. Then you go to some police departments that use trunking system, and it's like, I'll have to start from scratch again. So it's kind of a different method of security. It's more of inconvenience. Yeah.
How do you feel about the conventional?
Versus conventional? They all have their place. If you have something where you have lots of people trying to talk to lots of other people, because it's named after the phone trunks. You only have so much space to work with. Trunking is great for that. But if you have certain frequencies where it's more of an announcement thing than a person-to-person, it's like everyone hears this, there's certain ones you need to listen to, then that's near conventional. Yeah?
How did you work at all with like the bot and other
That's one thing I've been looking into. Talked to various people on the net who've been doing this on the East Coast. The reason they were able to crack the code for that is because they're using just plain ASCII. The protocol they're using is FOXSIGHT, which for digital radio is real common. You can get the information anywhere. It's the same one used for pagers. Basically, most people don't know where to start, and if they do know there's to try to listen to something, and then if they think, I gotta have some special computer, I gotta do something, or if they don't understand the protocol, then odds are they're not gonna hear it. So one or two people might be able to pick up on something. It's interesting that last year someone put a little letter to the editor in 2600 magazine, and he was saying, I'm in the LA area, the police need to be held accountable, they're using this more and more, does anyone have any information on it? Generally, there isn't much of that. There's some legal wrinkles to it as far as monitoring digital channels. It probably is in the darker side of the gray area, varies from federal level to state level. It can be done. The technology isn't all that advanced. It's just a matter of putting it together and taking the time and effort to do it. Basically, what you'll probably end up finding is the same thing you'll find on the local car-to-car ones, where when police talk on dispatch, everyone in the world hears them. If they're talking on, because everyone's supposed to be listening there, if they're talking in tactical or some special surveillance one, you'll hear, I think there's some strange stuff every now and then, but generally it'll still be regular operation. If they're doing short-range car-to-car, a lot of cops use the radios like CBs, and I've heard all manner of things said over there, from sexual comments about people that they're watching to clandestine meetings where they want to make sure that no one else is going to hear them, and they're having the hush whispers about various no-no things that they're up to panic when one officer who was heard some light disturbance was encountered, was basically pelted with beer at a party and panicked. And yes, officers panic, and you normally won't hear that, but if you monitor a lot, you'll pick it up every now and then. Anyway, as far as the legal end of it, it had a really good start. As far as the general principles, I like Act 34. It's very sensible. You know, the idea being that the information itself, getting it, isn't a problem if it just sits there and dies in the brain. You know, you get your chuckle out of it if it's something humorous or grand or fun or whatever it is, but that basically stops there. The only problem you have is when people actually put it to use, and that's what kind of the hidden issue as far as law enforcement agencies being able to tap into something. You know, sure, there's the issue of being able to catch the criminals, but what people are worried about is not so much someone hearing something, which might ruffle their feathers, but hearing it isn't a problem. Doing something with the information is. And that's where the problem starts. That's when you have, you know, the hackers run amok, is because they're not just hearing something, they're doing stuff with it. You know, when law enforcement agencies, they just listen to something, didn't do anything with it, no one would know. Probably a lot of people wouldn't care. But the thing is, they are doing various things with it, and that's what gets people all riled up. Basically, you guys heard about the most sweeping changes as far as telephony goes, about the Clipper chip and digital telephony. My feelings are pretty much similar to the others. Basically, not just from what you heard before, but because everyone's saying, hey, let's go digital with everything. You know, hey, let's be like wired. Hey, let's, you know, send everything through these methods. And yet, those are the very ones that are going to be monitored a lot. I'm not against wiretaps happening where they have their place. The problem is the integrity of the person. It's the age-old question. Who do you trust? You know, if you talk to anyone during their lifetime, you know, about something that you don't want everyone to hear, but you're talking to someone, obviously you trust that someone more than you trust others, and you probably base that on their conduct. Personally, I think the same thing goes for law enforcement. I'm not against any particular, against law enforcement in general. Laws have their place. They may not be perfect. I may not like everything that's there, but they do have their place, and these things do have their application. It's just a matter of what they do with it. I've known many officers who have a lot of integrity and really try to do a good job and take their integrity very seriously. Those have no problem with, you know, them being on the wiretap operation because they'll, yeah. Yeah.
When I go to like Radio Shack and I buy my book on mobile police frequencies, and I've been monitoring them, I never hear card across. Or if I am, I don't know it. How do you differentiate?
Okay, that's if you get it out of like the, you know, the Radio Shack scanner guide, that one is just a large compilation, basically direct from the FCC. It's like, oh, here's all the current licenses. Thunk. You know, and then it's up to you to sort it out. You try looking at the trunk systems on there, it's a nightmare. So it's like, oh, you want to see all the frequencies on the trunk system? So we'll list every single one that's possibly relevant that goes on for pages. Usually your best bet is on conventional systems, you'll find like various colors assigned. You know, there's red, there's blue, there's yellow, there's white, there's black, you know. And if you see it paired with another frequency that's like a little bit different, using a repeater, it's probably a large, probably a standard broadcast. And a repeater, for those who don't know, is a transmitter and receiver would take the signal, usually a week on the top on a hill, and rebroadcast it. The benefit of this is you can have a weak signal from a dinky little radio, barely makes it to the tower. Tower cleans it up, amplifies it, and puts it from a superior location that everyone in the world can hear. So I can have, dinky little radio puts out, 2 watts, something like that, reach one on a decent mountaintop with a decent power level that's tuned right, and you can reach and do 3 more counties, if it's a good repeater. So, the repeater ones is basically going through dispatch. Yeah, if you have any sort of if you have any sort of signal strength, you know, any way to measure that, then that's, you know, if it's a really big, powerful one, that's usually the repeater. If you just barely hear it and it's kind of crackly, it kind of fades in, fades out, and they don't always sound as professional, it's probably like the local car-to-car one. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What, to get the... Mm-hmm. Yeah. What for what frequency list?
Yeah,
just
for monitoring
your local area. That's, it's not that hard to gauge. Now, I mean, for, what?
Oh, yeah.
What more than... Yeah, I mean, there's the Radio Shack one. We basically like a list of frequencies. You have to pour through it, but you'll eventually figure it all out in the list of colors on there. The better ones are the ones that like ham radio shops or places like that where they take the ones that have a lot of use, and the other ones that are just used for control channels or things like that are generally ignored. So it'll be a lot thinner, yeah. The what? Yeah. Yeah, you can get those. It's a big cryptic list. You'll see endless call times. In fact, they've had allocated like letter ranges, and they think, okay, you know, this should be adequate for this like taxi services or whatever. But there's been so much more radio use among commercial use and everyone else that they've ran out of call sign allocations. And it's like, whoops, I guess we didn't assign enough, so then they add more of them. Yeah, you can get the frequency list, and I know one person who has it, you know, has it on CD. I don't know how you got that one, but it's basically, you know, you can look it up. It's a matter of how it's used, yeah? You won't from, like, the regular frequency list, but if it's a business, often they'll have their FCC license posted, and if it's one that has like a delivery service or something where they have regular dispatch, they'll have the thing posted. You can walk in and it'll tell you how many units they have, which ones are mobile, which ones are stationary, and if it's a tower or like a repeater, it'll have that listed and worked out and its height and everything else. So, you know, you can follow it from there. Yeah. For which applications? I mean, there's... Oh, okay. Data from the radio is basically switching carrier between one frequency and another one a short distance away so that you have your marking your space, your one and your zero. And the nice thing is that because you don't have to worry about resistance or people cutting the wire or anything else like that, if it's something point to point, you can go to very high data speeds, and that's what we do with satellites. You know, where some of you have heard that the signals get turned to digital form, and it's like, well, gosh, you know, my modem can only, you know, phone can only handle 14.4. How can we get more than this? Because you don't have to worry about junk in the way. Anything going to space and back is very clear. All the space transmissions, like from the shuttle, from the moon, from everything else, is usually about 10 watts, and that's plenty. Yeah. Within what? What physical restrictions or? No, that's only for the low frequencies for shortwave because on the lower frequencies, the longer wavelengths, that people love to use it because it has a phenomenon known as skip, where the signals bounce off the ionosphere and it's like, all right, great, you know, I can talk to everyone. The problem is everyone wants to go there. And lower frequencies aren't that space efficient with signals. So you could send like regular broadcast TV way on there, but you'd probably eat up the whole thing. Within amateur radio, you it's like the lowest one is 300 baud, you know, which is, they think, boy, that's, yeah, that's really crummy. What can you do with that? Better one, most common one I've seen is 1200. I think it kicks up to 19.2 at 440 and above, 440 megahertz. The nice thing that I found out as going through the FCC rules is that once you get to microwave, they practically left all restrictions. I noticed that, you know, if you have your ham license, anything from technician and above, if you go into microwave range, you can use unlimited data speed, you can use unlimited bandwidth, you can use, you know, the different varieties of spread spectrum, you can use multiple protocols, you can do just all sorts of things, which is kind of funny because most people don't use it, but they do leave it open for experimenting. And anyone who's interested in actually getting their feet wet and their hands dirty and learning this stuff, I'd recommend getting licensed, because it's basically, you learn basic electronics, the manuals are what, $5, test is $5, license is good for 10 years, and you have like a host of engineers to help you if there's something you're interested in. You say, I want to learn about digital, and you mess around with packet radio. Packet just means that, well, just like network packets, instead of sending the signals by itself and being prone to error, they'll have some bytes in front and bytes in the rear and probably some checks on to make sure everything made it. And that way you can actually send signals from one transmitter to the next one to the next one. And once the checksum works out, then you know the messages are intact and it's okay. One of the things that I see a lot of is it's like kind of a burgeoning worry is that everyone's saying, hey, everyone's going to LANs, and hey, everything's going to wireless. Hey, let's go all the wireless LANs. There are basically five types of wireless LANs. One is point-to-point infrared. Basically, you stick your hand in the middle, it stops it. All it is light. It's got just a few applications. Not too many people use it. The next one that people can have some interesting uses for is diffuse infrared. It's basically the same thing as your TV remote. All it does is basically just turning the light on and off and bouncing it off the ceiling, off the walls, and just for your sit-down laptop conferences where you can just sit down with everyone else and automatically you're on the LAN. The problem is everyone is on the LAN that's in that room, whether you like it or not. And it's light, and anything that can receive that gets it. And you can use encryption protocols and stuff. That's usually a pain. The other three methods that are used are all radio-based. One of them is using conventional digital use at 18 gigahertz and 18 billion cycles per second. That's Motorola's system. And because it's conventional use, you have to have a license for that. But other than that, it's hardly anyone has a radio that can reach anywhere near that. So it's, you know, fairly decent, fairly secure. The other ones you're more likely to run into is the 900 megahertz ones, which is in the same range as several other things like pagers and some amateur radioactivity. And use of spread spectrum is very necessary because otherwise any Joe with any radio can tune into it. And anyone with the same card can tune into it. And you're thinking, well, you know, gosh, how can they tune into this? They can basically do it with custom antennas. Antennas can be shaped to direct radio energy in, you know, a variety of different ways. So you can have someone sitting outside a building pointing a beam antenna in there and basically pick up the stuff that's in there. So that's why you have the second kind that's used, and that 2.5 gigahertz. And using spread spectrum is like where the rest of the LANs are, where people are worried about security, where it basically uses a higher frequency, hard to tune, uses frequency hopping spread spectrum, so it's like even if you get to that range, you can't really lock onto it, and even if you lock onto it, you're using cryptographic protocols on top of it, which is really good, but so only like large corporations or government agencies really have any hope of cracking it, and only with like a genuine effort. And so, I mean, even without PGP, systems like that, sure, it's going through the air, and sure, you know, the signals can get there, but it's a pretty good system. Yeah. Oh, easy. I've made custom antennas. I made one of them for 800 megahertz. And for those who are thinking, oh my God, you know, 800 megahertz, you're going to be evil stuff with cellular. There's all sorts of stuff on 800. There's fire departments, there's taxis, there's delivery services, and there's TV stations. If you take do chords in the mixing, you can tune several radios to cellular, and you'll pick up regular TV. Then the TVs you'll turn for a channel, and you'll pick up cellular. So the whole idea about, you know, having some special device that can listen in on cellular is an evil thing. It's just electrical signals going through the air, and no technology is perfect. People go for a cheap radio, cheap, you know, appliance, cheap equipment. You'll have things bleeding through, yeah? What? Okay. Okay, I'll check into that. So anyways, as far as the LANs go, the better ones are the 2.5 gig. Generally, you're not going to have any people tuning into it unless they have the same transmitter, the same card by the same manufacturer, which can be an expensive proposition, but the really determined can do it. And you get better results by making custom antennas. I know because I've made custom antennas to pull things in, and they work beautifully. They make really dramatic differences because no matter how good the radio is, everything has to go through that little antenna. Just burying it underground or covering it up with everything else, it's not going to get anywhere. You stick it on top of a roof, it's going to go a long, long way. One of the other similar systems is for cellular. There's two digital modes. One of them is TDMA, time division multiple axis. Basically, it takes takes the signal, turns it to a digital one, similar to like what you're pulling off your CD, and then interleaves it with other ones between towers before it finally gets back to the destination, turns it back. That's the one used in a few places. The one that all the rest of the AVLs are going to is CDMA, code division multiple access. The mode itself is spread spectrum, same frequency range, but you can pack a lot more on there, and they're using coding techniques to cover all this, which means the digital modes, spread spectrum, you're going to have like virtually no noise. Because you're not listening to normal bandwidth, you're not going to be susceptible to little quirks and glitches and things along the line, so you can actually transmit below the noise level, which is kind of bizarre, but which means your phones having only using a little bit of power will last a lot longer. The transmission is going to be a lot clearer, and because of the constant handshaking and a robust protocol, you're not going to have all your dropouts and cutoffs like you have from time to time with some cellular services. And it's very difficult to hack because you basically have to be either a cellular phone tech who specializes in that with a tweaked phone, or an RF engineer who can do it from scratch, which is, you know, a major pain. So this stuff is getting better. None of it is foolproof. Unfortunately, technology, especially radio technology, the power for that tends to go to whoever understands it best. In the past, when agencies or businesses got lazy, wily hackers could get a hold of all sorts of stuff. But now that certain agencies are really getting on the ball and really wanting to have lots of service.